Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hello, hello, hello.
Hi, guys.
We are here doing another episode of Man in the High Castle. This is episode 3, The Illustrated Woman. I am your host, Courtney Henderson. I can be found on Instagram, on Twitter, all of the great things at C-O-U-H-E-N. And I am here tonight with two lovely men.
Well, thank you very
handsome,
much.
Handsome,
handsome
men.
Thank you. Handsome. I appreciate the appendage. Hi, guys. My name is Taylor Bolt. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt. That's T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T. Or on Instagram at Tbolt, also B-O-L-D-T.
And my name is Zach Schwartz. You can find me on Twitter at Zach is Zach. It's Z-A-C-H. It's the only spelling, the correct spelling.
There are going to be people that will tweet you to disagree.
To challenge. Please do.
Also, just for the record, you can totally call us lovely. That will
lovely?
Also.
Lovely? Yeah, okay.
That works as well.
It really doesn't
you
hurt.
Know, the music just kind of like gives that tone. Are you guys getting more used to the music at all?
Yeah. No, it's kind of like calming in a way now, which is even scarier, I think, that it like somehow calms my nerves.
It creeped us out and now it's calming.
Yeah. It's like, oh, am I like conforming to the state now?
Yeah,
is that what that means?
It's you so better be careful.
Yeah, no. Seriously.
So this episode, The Illustrated Woman, we're on episode 3 now, and so we finally have had some direction, we finally had a little bit of character development, kind of a storyline, you know, move through a little bit more.
Right, we're past the exposition and character setups now, now we have our established characters, and it's time to get into the meat of this story.
Feel a little bit comfortable with everybody. You kind of know who's at the table now, who the players are, who's going to get you in trouble.
So,
no big surprises.
What do we think of people? I mean, let's just start from the beginning of the episode, I guess.
Sure. So we pick up right after sort of the incident where Joe and Juliana are on the bridge. And then they go back to the hotel. And Joe admits to her that he's killed a man, which I thought was very interesting. And we're like, we know, Joe. We know you have. they have what I thought was like a really lovely little scene there where that was the first time I felt that, like, they were really able to fully kind of let down their guard. And even then, it wasn't totally let down.
Who would have thought that, like, killing a guy was the, like, bonding point
right?
in any kind together. Of relationship?
Man. Yeah, I guess once you kill a guy together, you're in it.
Yeah.
You're at least partners in secrecy. And then she was really okay because Joe admits that he read the letter to find her, which I guess, I don't know, it was interesting because Juliana, her reaction to me seemed to be like, oh, that's kind of sweet. Like, not directly.
Yeah.
But she didn't mind so much.
I was surprised she didn't mind. I would have thought that it would be, you read a private letter of mine, you know, I don't know. My roommates react poorly if I opened their mail. I would think
that. But I mean, he kind of saved her.
Yeah.
Also,
I mean, she would probably be dead if he hadn't opened the letter. So.
Very true.
It's, you know, I think reading a letter of private word is forgivable when you're still alive to like be mad about it or forgive it in the first place.
Sure, but I feel like she really trusts him now. This is the first time. I mean, she's trusted him on and off up to this point, but she still kind of kept him at arm's length and like wanted to pay him back, didn't want to owe him anything.
Right.
And then they're like flirty, but this wasn't. Now it's sort of like he's in her like inner circle in a way. She's really the trust. I mean, he's in there like top class Nazi agent, like he is.
I mean, he reports to the main guy. Ogre, I mean, as far as what we've seen, whose name he's learned.
I still am not comfortable pronouncing
it. I learned it. No. I'm going to keep using it. Even though we learned his name is what, John?
So there's your drinking game if somebody...
Every time I say Obergruppenführer, you have to find a German beer.
There you go. So is that the same moment, I'm trying to remember now, that she confesses her actual name?
Right.
And that comes up because it's in the letter. Because
that is the moment. Yeah. So, so viewers, forgive me. I've actually watched, because we were supposed to film three last week originally. I think everyone has watched four also now. So it's a little cloudy, three and four. I'm so bad once I've watched two episodes in a row.
We're going to try not to spoil.
Exactly. So we're going to try to stay right inside episode three.
Zach, you're going to keep us on check.
So you'll see my face and I'll react in horror as you spoil.
Okay.
So I'll be telling one,
even more incentive.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he learns from this letter that her name is actually Juliana. And so he's like, oh, hey, cool. Who's this Trudy girl? And
he doesn't seem like that put off.
Oh, no. I mean, I feel like he's the kind of guy who's really used to aliases. And also, I feel like he knows there's something more that's going on in her life, or just with this girl. Cause she's so out of place. I mean, they both kind of are. Yeah. But if you look at the denizens or the citizens of Cannon City, these guys stick out like sore thumbs, like this waitress in from the Pacific States and this guy who, I don't know. I mean, he's kind of, I don't know how you describe him, but waspy. He's just very...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, literally. I mean, we're talking, like, superior race, German Reich stuff. Yeah. Like
New York City.
Yeah, he's a New York, very, very waspy guy. So you're going to stick out like sore thumbs regardless. I don't know. I'm surprised that she's gotten away with as much secrecy as she has to this point. But now it's like, they have to trust each other. So the truth comes out, at least her truth comes out to him.
I thought it's been interesting seeing how many people around them you are starting to see, okay, well, he's a spy for this side and he's a spy for this side. And it's almost telling in just how big, I guess, the resistance actually is. Because I think when I started watching it, I was like, well, how could they possibly stand any chance of defeating these two armies, essentially, two most powerful armies in the world at this point?
Well, pitch them against each other.
Yeah, yeah.
That seems to be the most logical step. But I think they might be, you know, whether or not they have an actual say in that, I think just based on other things going down, that might be where the storyline's sort of headed. You know, we know from, like, the scenes with oh, what's his name? The Japanese...
The prince?
Overseer. No, the advisor.
Inspector.
To, it's the T word. This is gonna... Sorry, everyone. I want to say Togomi.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Togomi. You know, there's something brewing. So I think that the resistance, knowing that, I mean, they kind of have a shot, you know?
Yeah.
They kind of have a legitimate shot. But yeah, everyone's very careful in Cannon City, and rightfully so. And I'm also interested in knowing, because people are sort of accusatory in that way... I feel like there's been some agents through this place before. Mm-hmm. There's been some serious.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Like Lemuel, like the owner of the restaurant, like some of the other locals, the really albino-y kind of looking guy.
I think they've
been through this before.
I think that's good to own that too. Well, I thought that was like really awesome casting, and yeah, there's this a character with albinism who's a staple in Cannon City, and I don't know, I love that. I think that's important, you know. And it also speaks to just how eclectic the citizens, because it furthers the storyline in that it speaks to how eclectic and diverse the citizens of Cannon City are and can be. You know, this is a refuge for people who maybe don't quite fit in the Pacific States or inside the Greater Reich. They, you know, go to the neutral states. It also makes me wonder why the neutral states don't have a governing body at all. It seems like that sort of would have arisen at some point.
And I think that's where some of the hesitation and some of the kind of uneasiness of the people there comes from. Not just entirely from the resistance, you know, and these two governing parties on either side of the neutral zone coming in and kind of working their business. But there is no law. I mean, and even when she went to get the Bible, you know, it was kind of like, well, it's not illegal, but that doesn't make it right. Or like
I could still get good in trouble.
Yeah. And everything that they do is that way.
Yeah, everyone's uncomfortable because they're in an anarchist state.
Just because it's not illegal doesn't make it legal.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of a thing. So they're watching the wrecks. But so they kill the guy and they find the map.
Right.
Which I would thought was so odd, because if I had killed someone that I knew to be a spy and found a map, I think I would be like, well, that's an area I'm not going to go look.
Interesting, yeah.
That's an area I'm definitely going to avoid, assuming it to be a big hideout. But
yeah, that's like
good for them for not being a coward like me. And
you would
more.
Make the worst girl in a horror film. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, well, you'd survive. You'd make it through to the end.
Well, they're alive still, you know. By the end of episode three, they're both still alive.
It worked out, but yeah, I guess you're right. That could have gone horribly awry.
Nazi
compound.
Yeah, seriously.
What do you think of that? So it's Copper Gulch Mine, and she's insistent that they go. He doesn't really want to go.
Yeah.
But he's not going without her, or he's not going to let her go alone.
Right. It's sort of, again, like from his perspective, from like if we analyze Joe, it's so interesting because we still don't know whether he is just sort of milking this contact for everything that she's worth, or if he cares, or both. And I kind of think it's probably both right now.
I think he doesn't know what side he's on. I mean, because he's torn a little bit by both, because of course, having this contact and having his mission, and that's all he's known so far, you know, I think him coming out and being in the neutral zone and meeting her, who's from the Pacific States, it's eye-opening, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard when...
And I also don't think he talks to girls very often.
No. I don't think so either, but it's one of those things where he's never thought about anything else because he's never been exposed to thinking about anything else.
Right.
And now he is being exposed.
Well, he saw the film. I mean, we don't know what was on that film. I mean, it was titled the same as the other one, so we can assume it's some of the same footage, but we've still seen very little. Mm-hmm. I feel like based on what we've seen, there's something else that we haven't seen too. That's just it's going to be revealed.
Because they also talk about films, like there are clearly multiple, and not I don't think multiple of the same thing.
Yeah. So do you think that The Grasshopper Lies Heavy is just like a code for that kind of film, or do you think that these are like it's like these are different films, and every film of this kind, but they're different films, has that title, or do you think these are two copies of the same film? I don't know.
Until you ask that, I would have said they're two copies of the same film.
Right. Yeah. Which is like what I originally thought, but I'm wondering because they didn't show even any of the same footage that they had shown Juliana see. So they sort of left it open that maybe these two films aren't the exact same. But in either case, both of these characters I feel like know something about the world, or at least about whatever's represented that we don't know yet. And I'm real curious and want to find out what that is. And, you know, I think we're taking little steps. And again, this is sort of like the episode four information getting mixed up in my head, because there's a little bit more that happens regarding the films in episode four.
I thought it was interesting that we finally see Joe turn a corner almost, in which he says, you know, I'm doing all this to follow my father's footsteps, and I never even really knew him. Am I correct in that? I don't know. It was the first time we've seen him sort of start to question the mission at hand and start to kind of undermine.
And I read a review, actually, that suggested that, I think the actual words were that Joe's dad's name might rhyme with Fittler.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. This is just something that I had read.
Whoa.
That was something that they were suggesting. Because I thought when I watched it that he was saying that the
Obergruppenführer.
Obergruppenführer. I thought that he was implying that was his dad. Like, he's never met him because he was like...
That as well.
I think that he's definitely a father figure, though. In either case, I feel like there's definitely some, like, son-dad chemistry going on between those two characters. But...
Which could lend to him being the son of Hitler. And, like,
interesting.
He was in charge... Obergruppenführer was in charge of...
It's okay.
I'm just going to point at you.
Point at him and say Führer.
He knew... that Hitler had this, you know, child, and he was the one that was supposed to, like, kind of cover it up. And so, like, he dealt with it. And that's where he kind of became the father figure, perhaps.
But then why would he not want, because part of the problem, there's, like, sort of this maybe lack of peace in the near future, right, is that we think that Hitler or the Führer, Hitler, is going to die. And we, like, the world's going to erupt into war again as the Reich wants more power, more control of more territory from the Japanese Empire. I would think he would – would he want stability, or is he maybe – maybe it's bigger than him at this point? Maybe he's just sort of like a cog in the machine?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably.
Because I feel like if he had a son, wouldn't he want to at least kind of like have him – at least not like running the subversive.
You know, it's hard because the time period. I mean, I feel like it's a time period when a lot more people were having kids that they couldn't claim.
Oh,
you know
I see,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I see what you're saying.
Because divorce, you know, and the families that are kind of all hodgepodge like we get to have today, they didn't exist then.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's
especially if his dad is Hitler or somebody of authority and kind of higher up like that.
What you're saying is Joe is Jon Snow.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh.
I mean, I guess
maybe.
The question I always had was, is Hitler even still alive? Because we haven't gotten to see him to this point in the show.
We see just like little clips here
clips
and there.
Clips that could be old clips, could be, you know,
so you think
almost like a propaganda. Like
it's like a media cover-up that Hitler might be gone. And that, did you say that last episode?
Yeah, I did. This is me putting on the tinfoil hat.
I was like, this sounds really familiar.
To push that agenda. No, so I don't know. I mean, if that is his father and then this guy kind of takes in the son and tries to kind of raise him as this spy and...
I don't think he raised him. I mean, I don't think...
Like
kids know about Joe.
I don't think they know.
I don't think he's like part of the family.
But, and also,
I think this is a mission.
Again,
you know?
There's a moment in episode four where I'm going to stop doing this now. But there's a moment in episode four where I kind of am skeptical that he might actually be Hitler's son. But I love it. And here's the thing: if he is, there's way more to the story. I don't even know how it would come up, but I feel like it's got to come up somehow.
Well,
you know?
I mean,
we want to know who his dad is.
I think it will because. He was sent, I really believe he was sent to the neutral zone to die.
Oh, you think so?
Okay. Well, I mean, they wouldn't send somebody that was irreplaceable.
Exactly, yeah.
It's too risky.
He is replaceable because he's, why else would he be the one that's undercover in the line of fire, you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. I mean,
but for all the shooting and all the bad stuff that essentially has followed this guy... Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, Obergruppen and Fuhrer has tried to get him to come back, telling him, you know, cut the mission off, head back soon, or, you know, okay, well, you've done enough, head back, bring the, you know, I don't remember if he said bring the film back or not, but...
He wants the film.
Yeah, I don't think it's because of his life. I think it's because the longer he's there, the more... vulnerable the Reich is to being exposed, of Joe being exposed.
Right.
Which, like, let's switch back because we haven't even talked about Frank's family.
Right. Yeah. Okay. We got to talk about Frank a little bit. So.
Frank.
Frank
and then
in general.
Ed is the guy that he works with.
Ed is the guy that he works with. I love some of the stuff that happens in the Pacific States this episode. First of all, I'm still like, why didn't they just kill Frank? They really should have just killed him.
Yeah.
It seems really odd that they like pulled him down from the shooting.
I can only think that they didn't kill him because they think that there's something that he's going to tell them or like that they don't have the information. He really doesn't have the information on where Juliana or Trudy are. But he's going to maybe be able to get it.
Okay.
You know,
so
like she's going to try to get in contact with him.
That makes sense.
You know, that's the only thing. Because didn't one of them answer the phone?
Why would you want to kill him in the first place? Why would you put him in front of a firing squad if you were going to try to use him?
Because they wanted to see if he had the information already.
Yeah. Shakedown.
And
like
if he did, the second he gives it, he's dead.
But the official wasn't even there to even, like, try to get information. He was, like, up doing something else.
But then there's also the leak.
Yeah, we saw that same strategy that you're kind of referring to implored by the Nazis where they have the guy on his knees talking to the guy who they gave a bunch of drugs to.
I looked it up because, again, I was curious. Yeah. So apparently the thought is that it might be like LSD.
It's LSD.
Okay.
They don't say LSD. It's it's whatever the actual spelled out. It's like lysergic dye something.
Well, I didn't catch that.
It is LSD.
Like, LSD.
Because this corresponds with like the experiments that governments around the world were. I mean. government organizations were experimenting with LSD at this time historically, anyways, as like a truth serum or that sort of thing. And they're like,
which I you know, and he's, I felt bad for the guy, but I really love that scene. Yeah, I loved when Ophir came in. Ophir. I don't have time. Came in and was just like, the guy is useless. Yeah. You thought this was gonna be good?
Exactly.
I mean, and he's just kind of like, call me, you know, when
you gave him a transcendental experience.
Yeah,
for real, taking my life.
Just, I don't know. There was something about that. It just seemed kind of ironic, and it was just like, I loved it.
It kind of poked fun at using it experimentally.
Yeah, it did. It was
I thought it was really smart.
The walls are melting for him. It's an ID a bunch of people for you. I don't think that's gonna help.
Well, and it raises the question that the guy he points to, or you know, says it is that I was sure he was dead.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, same thing.
Oh, right.
Like, why didn't they just kill him? Because even if he wasn't it, he's replaceable.
He's replaceable. I mean, okay, he's a little
but maybe
higher
not.
Up the chain of command.
But still, but, I mean...
Well, here's the thing. Why would you... I mean, that's such... That seems like such a textbook move, is to, like, blame someone who's not the actual person to try to get them killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of course, I would at least like to think that I would be suspicious of that.
I don't think that the guy, when he's high, is, like, trying to do it to just, like, replace blame. I think he's just... It's just who he points to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because he knew, because he wasn't in the room when he was blamed. They brought him into the room, because remember, he wanted to see Obergruppenführer alone, and that's
when
he pointed someone out. So there was some either prior knowledge or something going on with that. But still such a good scene, because I was like, don't do it. I was like on the edge of my seat for all of that. Like, don't actually, wait, he's not. And I'm also like, why am I rooting for Nazis ever?
Yeah,
like, even though I want to watch this guy, like, this guy is not, you know, he doesn't deserve to die in the context of, like, he didn't commit treason. If you're going to put him on, put him to death for treason, he's falsely accused of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though it's like, he wasn't treasonous against this corrupt, like, awful Nazi fascist state.
I still want justice for the guy somehow.
It's really odd.
I mean,
this show makes me question my entire moral spectrum.
No, because, I mean, that's American, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Everybody gets their chance at justice.
It's justice under the system that's established. But, you know, I mean, if it was, like, if in the context of this, like, the Allies had won the war, they would be putting this guy to death for the exact same reason.
Yeah.
For not committing treason against the Nazi state.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. It's all subjective, I guess. Awesome scene.
I love that because, for me, that was really the only scene that, like, progressed the story. You know, because it was just, I felt like the whole episode was just kind of Joe and Julian. It didn't go anywhere. I mean, we meet the marshal, but other than that,
I feel like there's
nothing's
a lot of
really changed. They're still in Cannon City. You know, she's still trying to figure out, you know, what
that's
she's
a good
doing.
Point, actually. I didn't think of this as a non-episode because I was really interested the whole time. But truth be told...
Well, and it doesn't make it a bad episode.
No,
I'm just saying the storyline wasn't moved along much.
Yeah.
That and then, of course, the marshal. I mean, the marshal's really
the
saving grace
active.
Of it, actually. Like, the momentum to kind of, like, progress it to force a change.
What did you guys think of the marshal as a character, hopefully reoccurring, but what did you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't really get it at first. At first I was like, okay, so we're supposed to be afraid of this guy. I didn't really understand where he came from, and then we find out that he's sort of connected to this guy that they've just killed. He apparently didn't get a phone call, but now he's, like, the bad guy. Like, he's been established sort of as the bad guy. And I mean, his tactics are harsh. You definitely get the idea. But it's also like, I don't know, he seems like he's like, you know how there's certain bad guys that like they're scary or it's just a lot to deal with when they lose their chill, you know?
Yeah.
The marshal had no chill.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There was never any chill at all. he is always a live wire.
I liked it. I thought, like you said, it was smart to add in a villain that can almost be on the road with them. Like, it's their villain away from the
Reich. And and it's totally separate from... Because he's a bounty hunter. So, I mean,
he's not
really on any side. He's on the side of making money for himself.
Right. He was working with, apparently, this SD guy that they just killed, who the SD is, like, an overseeing organization of the SS, I think, if I researched that correctly. So he's a Nazi agent, the guy they just killed.
Right.
Yeah, he seems like a rogue Nazi agent or something.
But the marshal if the other side wanted to pay him to kill somebody on the Nazi side, he would do it.
Presumably, that's what
I mean. He's a bounty hunter. He's just out for the cash.
Right.
And I love that. I felt like in Cannon City, he was also very out of place.
Yeah,
like, he's like straight out of a spaghetti western to me.
But I also kind of get the vibe that some people there had seen him before. Like, he'd been through. Because the gas station attendant knew
him.
Knew who he was.
Well, yeah. And again, I just think they've been down this road before. But I feel like this time, and this is why it's kind of like he had to be in the show now and kind of why the scenes with him happened. Because I kind of, whenever I watch something, I always think, like, why now? You know?
Right, right.
Like, why did Trudy get killed now and then Julian has to go in this, or why, you know? So with him, he kills the guy and, like, strings him up.
Right.
You know, and he says he has to stay here. Nobody's taking him down.
Which I thought, let me just say in an aside, the way he ID'd the guy, I don't know if anyone noticed that they were on playing cards.
Yes.
Did you guys right, yeah, which yeah.
I thought it was so strange to face it. Like, did he make those cards? Where did those
I think they were given to him.
Yeah,
I want to say that that's a thing.
Is
and
that,
I'm not
okay.
sure. I did not research this, but I want to say that that used to be a thing somehow.
Okay. Like, on playing cards?
Like wanted posters or something like that on playing cards. That strikes
right on.
Either that or it's like a motif from another movie that I saw at some point.
Yeah, no.
But I thought it was cool. I thought it was.
It was.
An interesting, because he seems like the kind of guy, like the marshal, I think that hat, I think shotgun, I think like a cigar or like cigarettes at least.
Or at
and,
least
like,
the two
poker chips and playing cards.
Yeah,
yeah
totally.
It's like, that's the kind of like aesthetic that he carries, so I thought it was super appropriate that he have the playing cards. But we did lose our favorite bookseller so far in the series.
Yeah,
out of that scene, for better or for worse, shouldn't be. I guess you shouldn't be distributing Bibles in Cannon City, but more importantly, your face should not be on the Marshall's playing cards.
I don't care who you are.
You are SOL.
I also thought it was interesting, kind of to show the chaos in that neutral zone in the way that he strung the guy up onto this pole. I mean, he's just hanging there. And
no one's going to cut him down.
But even, like, you guys are saying...
They're
like,
not allowed to.
Right,
I mean, and they're... That's, I feel like, that's where it escalated, because I don't think he's ever done that before.
Well, it's also like, this is an established member of this society. Like, he owns a bookstore. Like, it's not like he's like some, I mean, he's there. Like, everyone in town's got to know him. Like, you've got to know that there's a bookstore there. You know what I mean? And he apparently sells enough books to eat. So he makes a living as a bookseller. I can't imagine there's another one, and yet he just got killed, and no one's going to do anything about it.
So
it's so
what did you think about
anarchist.
Him?
It's
scary.
Saying, and I wish I remembered for sure, but doesn't he say where the girl, like, that he saw her, and she came in, and she bought the book, and all of that? He says he saw
pretty
her.
Pretty girl. He said there was a pretty girl.
Yeah. And he, like, with the dark, I'm like,
and he says the waitress at the diner.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're dead anyways. Like, what? Yeah. Come on, bro.
But I guess he thought maybe if he had some information still. I don't
know. But why do you have to tell the truth? You know what I mean?
That's a good question.
I also thought the guy in the diner wasn't going to out here. Because the guy in the diner, didn't he out her a little bit? No?
Am I right? I'm trying to remember.
Well, I mean, he just said that she worked there.
Yeah,
and
that's
true.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he said
something like,
she left at lunch. She left at noon or something.
She left
haven't
at
seen
noon.
Her.
Yeah.
So he didn't really. He didn't
out her that bad.
Yeah, he basically said he wouldn't be in trouble necessarily with the marshal.
Because he didn't.
If he was like, I'd never seen her before, the marshal's going to be like, you're
lying
to me. He
didn't say, that she left town. I mean, he just said she left at lunch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was, I also thought the interesting thing was, at the very beginning of the episode when they're, they realize they have to get out of town and they're going to leave separately and meet each other, and then the marshal shows up. So it jacks that whole plan up.
Yeah. I mean, there was some of the marshal stuff. The marshal scenes were just put you on edge.
Yeah. I'm excited, though, for the next episode and episodes going forward with him in it. Just as sort of, it's nice to have... As bad as this sounds, it's nice to have that character where you're, every time you see him on screen, you're like, oh, God.
Like, something's going to happen.
What's he going
to
do?
What's he up to now?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. He's definitely an agent of inciting action.
Yeah, seriously.
I definitely don't think we've seen the last of him.
Yeah, no, for sure not. I'd actually like to take it to the Pacific States a little bit now, too, since we sort of started east and are working our way working our way west, if you count Cannon City as east, I guess.
Yeah.
Again, some of the stuff with Frank, they clearly should have killed him. I loved, first of all, okay, so we have the prince and the princess come to town. I loved some of the scenes. I caught this. I don't know if anyone else caught this. When they're at the little memorial garden, the prince and the princess, like, it's sort of like a montage thing where they visit different places. They're at the gravesite of Yamamoto, who was the Japanese general in World War II. He was the mastermind, quote unquote, behind Pearl Harbor.
Oh, did not catch that.
No, yeah, I was like that name sounds familiar. Which I thought that was really neat because, of course, they would come and they would pay respect to someone who served in the military.
Yeah.
And but we get to meet the characters just a little bit in this one, and there's more to come. But I have a feeling this has been sort of held up as this momentous, because this is the first time that the royal families come to the Pacific States, I think they say.
Yeah.
And so it's been held up as this big thing. So it's sort of the with the Chekhovian, like, you can't put a loaded gun on stage and not fire it. I'm
yeah.
like, what's gonna happen here? I have a feeling.
You do sort of have this sense that's gonna be the first domino to fall,
right?
And knock everything else
because
over after.
Everyone's so particular about it,
yeah.
And so sort of like so worried about it. There's just so much stress around it, and there's been all of these scenes now building up to, oh, it needs to be just like this. What kind of furniture are they gonna have? Oh, that's not acceptable.
Right?
Yeah.
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 Well, and then, you know, when the prince actually got in the room. And it's so funny because I don't picture it happening like this, you know, now. It went, you know, when President Obama goes somewhere and is meeting with the authority of some other country, they're not just sitting there quietly with somebody sitting next to them doing all the talking.
Right.
You know,
right.
And at some point they were talking about him maybe not speaking because of threats. And he, you know, basically said, I want to hear it not from you, but I want to hear it from the person who's actually has this idea.
Right, right.
I don't remember how he worded it. You know, I want to hear it from the mouth, you know, why not kind
right.
of thing. And they bring up the threats and everything. And he just kind of says, which I respected, no, you know, I came here to speak to my people.
Like, I have
they're
to
gonna
do
hear
it.
From me,
yeah.
you know.
Because yeah. It would be embarrassing not to, you
yeah.
know? It would be like a sign of...
weakness, definitely.
Well, yeah, like a sign yeah. of weakness, I guess. It would be like you can't... if you came here for that one express purpose and you just don't do that one thing for what reason, for like whatever reason, all of a sudden it's like, well, why did this even happen? There's been all this public buildup, so he kind of does have to speak. I feel like that's a good decision on his part. But it also, for the purposes of the story, shows us his... he's sort of honorable, you know? The prince is sort of, he's like sort of this honorable guy. And you almost, like, you feel for him. I mean, even if he
is... I totally do. I like his character.
Yeah, I do too. Even if he is like this, like, monarch,
yeah.
autonomous overlord of the Pacific States.
I will
That's
say...
That's why this show messes with your moral spectrum so much.
Yeah.
Your ethics are all out of whack.
It's a new level of rooting. It's like rooting for the bad guy.
Yeah,
it's a
you're
new
like...
Level. Like, you thought Walter White was... weird to root yeah. for, and now you're rooting for Nazis.
Exactly.
And,
I'm like,
yeah.
I just wanted you to not kill that Nazi. What's wrong
yeah.
with me?
Yeah.
Kill that Nazi, I guess.
Yeah.
It's an alternate world, okay? Just remember.
Yeah, it's a very
it's
different
not real.
World.
It's not real.
Exactly, exactly. It's what gets me through the night. but yeah, I thought some of the Prince stuff was very cool. And then, again, like you mentioned, not a lot of actual action happening. I think that, especially if we look at Frank's stuff, it's all... rising action. It's all building.
Yeah.
He sees the bodies of his sister and her family.
Which, can I just say, my goodness, like,
yeah.
you kill his family already, and then
and
he has to go ID
to
go yeah,
bodies?
And
you
like,
know who they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, exactly. You,
you, already,
you only kill them because you knew who
exactly.
they were. This wasn't a
you
random act of
ID.
Crime.
I really felt for him.
So
that.
How did you feel then for his brother-in-law?
Right.
All,
yeah.
Like, all of those scenes.
I don't know. It was one of those things where I feel like I wouldn't have reacted that way if I just came home from like a business trip is what it sort of seemed like.
Yeah.
Or, and he's just like, oh, so your family's dead. And just like, get out of here. Shoo, you. I just, there's more going on. But I think that maybe he's in denial. I mean, I think.
Yeah, shock.
You would have to be shock and denial. And how would you handle that? Like, oh, can't wait to see my wife and kids. What's that you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all dead? Oh, fantastic.
God.
And he immediately sort of blames Frank in a way.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of those things where I really felt for Frank in that situation, because for him it's one of those where he all but said, like, don't you think I wish it was me? You know, like, yeah. Don't you think if yeah. I could have traded places or don't, you know, I take this blame. At the same yeah. time, I think it also gave him like a little bit of a fire for... I won't go as far as to say, you know, what Trudy was doing, you know, in the resistance.
Sure.
But I think it was kind of the first experience where he's like, oh, yeah, this isn't okay. Living right. like this isn't okay. And not that the resistance has it right necessarily, or that I need to be a part of some big movement, but this, it can't be like this anymore.
Yeah, but then we see, here's the thing that's interesting. It's interesting in this episode, because I thought at the end of last episode that Frank was just going to be sort of like resistance, like his resistance of one, just like anti-establishment. And then we see him start to feel that way. He's definitely dealing with some turmoil. And then we see this scene in the bar where he's approached by what I'm presuming is just like a resistance, some lady in the resistance, and he utterly just shuts her down, turns her down, says her cause is silly, kind of. And leaves, won't hear any more of it. So there's still a lot of turmoil going on. I mean, I feel like I wouldn't be cool with a government establishment just randomly yeah. deciding to kill.
But yeah. I also think he kind of blames the resistance for the killing as well, because
yeah.
had she not left with the film.
But then why doesn't he just blame Juliana?
Because he loves her.
Doesn't he sort of partially blame her weird in the things. Way that he hangs up the phone?
And I do, yeah.
When she says, I love you,
true, I guess.
He kind of lets it.
A weird combo.
Yeah. I do think he kind of blames her. But again, he blames... for her, it's like a ripple effect. Mm. She only did what she did because her sister got killed, and her sister was doing it because of the resistance. And that's right. really all they know about Trudy, because... that's all any of us know about Trudy, because she got killed right away.
She has that one scene where she's like, take care of yourself. And then she's just dead in the street the next scene. Oh, well.
So if you can remember back, I want to get into predictions.
Okay.
Talk about what comes after all this.
Let's do it.
And now, you're after Buzz TV predictions.
Now, this music is creepier than
this is
the
maybe,
Edelweiss music.
Yeah. Maybe creepier than Edelweiss.
I love it. It just always makes me think of Halloween.
It's really thematic.
But,
very good for this.
So we'll start with you, Zach. You lead the course. From what you saw, what do you think comes next?
Well, I guess I feel like we start to see Frank edge closer and closer towards getting in bed with the resistance, and you could always tell it was going to be a slow process for him. That it was going to be one of those things where even in the bar he was like, I'm still not interested, but then he's at the replica gun factory and he's making a real gun, or has a real gun, and so all of a sudden we sort of see him turning this corner, and there's all the foreshadowing with the radio playing, talking about the diplomats in town, and I mean, it's very clear. You would think that that's why he has the gun. I'm not sure
why.
His intention is that he either intends to go shoot at the Japanese diplomat that's in town, or what?
The prince
thank
in town.
Thank you. Okay,
first of all, side note, isn't it odd that Ed, like, lies for him that he's sick, like, can't even get to the phone, like, he's like, okay, I'll say that you're puking your guts out, kind of, and then Frank's just, like, at work later that afternoon, and it's just like, all right, take
totally
care of
he just shows up, and he's like, are you,
it's like, dude,
did you talk to the boss?
Okay.
Cool.
That's cool. Yeah, like, I sort of laid myself out on the line for you, man.
Yeah.
You were really sick this morning.
I still think it was... He was happier to see that he was there.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like, okay, now I don't have to keep doing this.
Ed really cares. I predict that Ed is going to, we're going to see more of his relationship for Frank. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what it is. Because I think it's just that Frank's like just obviously been through a hard time and Ed cares. But I think that their relationship is going to become more important. I think it's going to become more, or thicken, I guess, congeal a little bit over the course of the next few episodes.
Well,
I also think the marshal is going to be a character now for at least.
I know. I'm going to go look that up and see if he's recurring or how that works.
Yeah.
But it's like cheating, but it's not watching ahead. It's just, you know, doing my homework.
You can do that.
Well, my prediction, I'm going to go with Joe and Juliana, and I feel like, I don't know. I kind of want it to happen, which I hate because I hate wanting romance in shows. I hate, you know, because it's just like so cliche so, and like the thing that they do. But I really do, because I feel like the guards will, that will be the only way that their guards will come down and they'll actually be able to trust each other and make progress against the Marshal and the Resistance, and or not against the Resistance, but just, it'll solidify both of their purpose.
Right.
And they'll be, united in their purpose.
Right, because right now there's sort of this discrepancy, like they're each driven by individual
means. Yeah, we still don't, she doesn't know what she stands for, and he doesn't really either.
So they can stand for each other.
Yeah.
Okay, well, when you say it like that, I don't want
No, but I think for real, I think that's really good, because, I mean, we need that sort of relationship. Again, it's so interesting that a show that on the face seems so much about systems, seems so much about, like, government systems and, like, people systems, it comes down to, like, it's just about relationships on like the core level between all of the Resistance people, between every single person who interacts with any other person. The relationships define the show so much more than even the time period or the systems that are at play. Because you care more about like a member of the Resistance independently than you do about like this weird cosm.
Right.
This, like,
well, it's like what you were saying with. It's like what you were saying with, you know, in one moment I'm like rooting for the Nazi guy to live, and in another moment,
exactly.
You know, and it's because you're not rooting for what they stand for. You're just rooting. You're rooting for mankind. You're
right.
Rooting for humanity in a sense.
You made me feel a little bit better about that.
I'm just rooting for life. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, we will, I guess, end this episode, and we'll be back, of course, next week with season one's episode 4,
Revelations, which should be fun. I'm going to watch it again so that we don't. And I'm not going to watch episode 5, so that we don't have to go through this again. Yeah, sorry. It's a little trigger happy. Thank you guys very much. This is a good one.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.